just kind of...
Why? This is interesting.
It says recording paused, and it was recording for 10 minutes. What's that about?
Just pause.
Okay, well, I'm going to delete that, then. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to start talking now. Well, seeing as you guys, like, have all been here, that's fairly helpful. Because I don't have to go into this full explanation of, like, what I am or where I come from or any of that stuff, because I think you guys have, like, all know that already, right? So.
One of us do it.
What's that?
Should one of us do it?
Pop quiz.
Pop, yeah, there we go. So, what I'm doing tonight actually is I wanted to actually talk a little bit about my experience with Shingon, like what I have accomplished or not accomplished, I guess what I have been through since I've been going through all the training that I've gone through, because I haven't really talked about any of that. I mean, I've been coming here for, I think next month, I think would be a year, I think actually. I think this is my 11th month coming here. And I don't think I've ever even talked about that. I always just tell you guys the same things that I always, you know, if there's new people here, I always say, yeah, this is what I did. I've studied this long and so on and so forth, and that's why I'm teaching and so on and so forth. But, you know, as you guys know, up until last month, I really had never even, I pretty much only just been teaching meditation. I haven't actually taught anything to do with the specific sect that I belong to. And that was actually something that was really by design. Because when I started doing the Keigyo training, which is basically the word that we use for ministerial training, when I started doing that, 3 years ago, I originally knew that I was going to get to the point where I was going to have to go out, where I would go out and teach. But the whole concept of that idea was to go out and teach something that was non-sectarian. Just to basically go out and teach Buddhism. And just teach meditation. And so we made, you know, really a conscious effort to just do that. So when I started teaching in Placerville last year in February, and then when I started teaching here, it's just kind of been that flowing of just doing it that way. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple months ago that David and I were having conversation about, you know, well, maybe now, you know, the six elements have been taught, you know, a couple times, you've kind of gone through them. So he said, you know, maybe we talked about maybe it's time to start trying to introduce something that is fairly foreign to most Americans. I mean, American Buddhists. There are not a lot of books about Shingon Buddhism. I mean, you know, there's like maybe a handful. Suppose if you went to Japan, you know, there's a lot of books in Japanese. Obviously, I don't read Japanese, so that would be a little, you know, as we came to find out, we had to figure out what that said. Well, you can read some of it, I guess. But this, the interesting thing is just that it, as a, and I've mentioned this before, but really, over the course of all this time, Shingon having been around in Japan, introduced in Japan and basically in the 9th century, but it actually goes even further beyond than that, obviously, because all forms of Buddhism essentially started in one way or another in India, and they just kind of made their way across to China, Tibet, Japan, and eventually they make their way to Europe and everywhere else. I mean, just little by little, that's kind of how that happened. So the concepts and the things that really where Shingon came from were originally started in India much earlier than the 9th century. They just weren't called Shingon. They were just known as what you would call an esoteric tradition of Buddhism, you know, which would later come to be called, they'd call it Vajrayana.
Called
Mantrayana. I mean, I've heard a lot of different ways of saying it. To be totally honest with you, the Shingon actually has never really been regarded in Japan as a Vajrayana school. It's really just considered a form of Mahayana Buddhism. That's just what it's always really been known as. And to be honest with you, when I look at all those different terms and different things you can call it, you know, Mahayana and Theravada and all these Hinayana and all these different names, does it really make any difference? I mean, what you call it? I mean, they're all just different traditions that have morphed over the course of time. And they continually change, you know? I mean, I think even when I look at, you know, the Shingon Buddhism that I'm teaching, that I'm teaching you guys, has obviously a lot of similarities to the Japanese version of Shingon. I mean, obviously a lot of this has come from those concepts. But I'm kind of teaching it in a different sort of way. I mean, the six element practice, as I mentioned before, while not originally a Shingon practice, has integrated very well into Shingon, into what I'm teaching here. And I think, honestly, the fact that all of you here have been through the six element practice, I think that you all probably will be able to have at least a basic grasp and understanding of what Shingon is, just because you've gone through the experience of meditating on the elements. I think it's a very important part of it. Because while Shingon has a historical reference as being like a, you know, mysterious, esoteric form of Buddhism that's hard to understand, that uses a lot of symbolism and rituals and mantras and all these different things, at its core, really, it is just, I really think of it as a living Buddhism, a living form of Buddhism. Because really what we're trying to do through all of these different practices is we're trying to figure out that we're all actually sharing everything, and that we're all part of this greater, as I said before, something that's basically greater than us but is us at the same time. And in Shingon, we call that the Dharmakaya. We, you know, as a deity representation, we call that Dainichi Nirai, which I spoke about that last month. But that's basically the concept that I discussed last month, which I think all of you were here last month. Were you here last month, right? I think everybody was here last month, so that's great. The concept of the attainment of enlightenment in this existence, and, you know, Sokushin Jibutsu, which we talked about last month, that concept really is just kind of that whole realization of life and realization of this connectedness that we have. That's a big part of what that is. That's a big part of the idea of attaining enlightenment in this existence, and that whole concept. There's obviously a lot more to it than that. You know, I think everybody's journey is going to be as different. And I think that that's one of the things that actually segues really well into what I wanted to say, as far as when I went into the idea of going into the training, to go through so many different days of different types of trainings and so many different, you know, learning to do different rituals and learning all these different things. When I went into it, I kind of had I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. I think I kind of went into it with this idea of like, geez, I'm going to learn all this really cool, like, you know, mysterious things. You know, I kind of had this concept like in my mind, well, I'm not sure what this is going to be like when I go into this, but I think the idea in my mind was I'm going to learn like all of these secret things, as they said. But as I got into it and I started doing the practices and doing the meditations and the visualizations and all the things that I was training, things kind of really developed in a way that I didn't expect. It really allowed me, over the course of time, of course, and I'm still obviously doing this, I'm still going through this training, it really allowed me to see things in a lot of different ways. I mean, to really be able to really put me on this path to awakening. And it's going to be a long journey. I mean, I'm not, you know, this is not something that we're all going to just, you know, suddenly wake up tonight after we're done meditation and we're going to be able to have this, you know, this crazy awakening that we're like good to go. This is something that's going to take, you know, my entire life. And those of us that are on any kind of, you know, spiritual path, or whether you're in formal training or if you're just trying to better yourself by doing meditation practices and things like that. This is something you have to be committed to. It's something that you have to, you know, continue to do and integrate all of these things into your daily life. But I will say that as I was going through all of this, it allowed me to reconnect with things that were present in me that I had just kind of forgotten that they were there. Things that are almost, in a lot of ways, very inexplainable. Almost like a peace or a calmness sort of coming over me as I'm going through this practice. And I started realizing, and I actually, even to this day, possibly less than it was maybe a few years ago when I started, because I'm still on this path. And I was just talking with David about this actually earlier, but this whole idea of trying to push things forward. I mean, my whole life, and I'm sure everybody in this room to some extent, has this sort of thing where you're like, it may even just be your job or whatever it is that you're doing in life. You're trying to, you know, trying to get somewhere. You've got like this plan and you're trying to like figure it all out. And ultimately what ends up happening is you end up like fighting things. Like you don't let the universe unfold as the universe should unfold. You see what I'm saying? And this is something that was very hard for me, especially in the beginning. To some extent now, still. I mean, I'm still in training, and I will be in training until the day I'm not here in this body anymore, and then who knows what happens from there, right? But I kept fighting that. I kept fighting all of these things. Like, I kept pushing my teacher even. I'm like, well, aren't we going to head here? Isn't this where we're going? I want a map. You know, I need a Google map that tells me how I'm going to do this training, what is the next phase of this, and where am I going, and how I'm going to get there. I need the whole thing mapped out for me. Well, of course, you know, my teacher was right. He says, you know, we're trying to live as a river here. We're trying to flow, and we're trying to connect with the universe and connect with our lives and connect with the people around us. And you want a Google map for how to get there. That's not going to happen. There is no Google map that's going to teach me all these things. So what I came to understand and through doing everything is I just had to stop fighting. And this is advice that I give to everybody in here. You know, whether, you know, when you're doing your practice and when you're living your life and doing the things that you do. Don't fight things so much. Understand that things happen. Things that we label as good, things that we label as bad. And I'm not saying sit around and just, you know, eat Doritos all day and drink beer and do nothing and just, you know, not apply yourself. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that you need to recognize that there is this flow and this plan that the universe has, and we just need to let go of all of these things that we have, all of these labels that we have, and all of these things that we do where we're trying to force the issue. We're trying to fight where things are going. You know? And that's one of the things that I really feel through all the Keigo training and all the things that I did, I came to realize that was what was happening to me while I was going through this. I was like transforming into a different person in the sense that I was not holding on to so many things and not trying to force the issue so much. I mean, as an example, as the six element practice, which I obviously have been teaching and which I'm a very big fan of, and I think it's a very powerful practice. That practice literally, during the Keigo, when I was going through all my training, that practice literally just fell in my lap. I didn't ask for a different thing to come in and show me something else different. So my teacher didn't come to me and say, hey, I found this practice that I think you need to learn. It literally fell into my lap. I was literally listening to a podcast. I was listening to the Buddhist Geeks podcast, which I think we're all familiar with. I was listening to the Buddhist Geeks podcast, and they had an interview with Bodhipaksa. And he was talking about the Living as a River book and the concept of the six elements. I had heard of the six elements because I'm, you know, obviously as a Shingon practitioner, I've read about them. But there was never really like a big emphasis placed on them. So when I read it, I was like, this is really, really, I basically listened to the podcast, I read the book, and I contacted my teacher in Hawaii and I said, look, I found this really, really powerful book. I think it relates very well to Shingon and what we're doing. Would you mind if I contacted this author, this teacher, and asked him if he would be willing to teach me how to do the six element practice? And thankfully, graciously, Bodhipaksa accepted. And we went through, you know, months of things where he would go over all of these meditations with me on Skype, he'd answer my emails, went through this whole thing. And of course, the whole time, I was letting my teacher in Hawaii know how this was developing, letting him know how this practice was to me and how it was relating to everything that I was doing. But the point of the fact is that that practice, it was almost like it was meant to fall in my lap. You see what I'm saying? I didn't ask for it. I didn't go out willingly looking for it. It literally just came to me as part of everything that I was doing. And now that practice has become a very, very important part of what I'm teaching, a very important part of what I think will be a very good way to introduce Shingon concepts to American, you know, Buddhists, people that have no concept or idea of what Shingon is, or maybe they read something and they really think that they understand the basis of it, but they don't. You know, one of the things that I learned, while I do enjoy reading books, one of the things that I've learned over the course of time is, I want to say that you have this, I think you might have asked me about this before, I think it might have been you, something about asking me about reading books and like, you know, I think you asked me, I think we talked about this after class last month, and I think you asked me like what I thought about reading books as opposed to, you know, going to teachings and things like that. I think we had a brief conversation about this, but I thought about that and I thought everything, really the basis of everything that I've actually truly learned over the last 20 years since I've been practicing, and not even that, but even just as over the last few years in training, is learning all of these things, really, more was learned by doing than by reading. The answers are all already here. The books are good, not all of them, obviously, but there are a lot of good books and a lot of good texts. Certainly the Heart Sutra is a very good text, and it certainly, as a sutra, certainly is a very important sutra in the Mahayana texts, and it's very important. And it does help you, for sure, as you meditate and as you start to get an understanding of what things are. But I think that doing the practice, going out and living the practice, is really where you learn the most. It really is. I mean, some of the experiences that I've had, I mean, even 2 years ago, I told my teacher that I was going to Mount Shasta. I've been to Mount Shasta, I've been there one time prior to that, the year prior. And I was just, I don't know, have any of you been to Mount Shasta?
To the Abbey or just the city?
Either, both. I went to the Abbey as well, but you've been to the mountain, right? That, the power that that area, that that mountain conveys is just, it's just like beyond words. That mountain is just like, it's amazing what that is. The magnitude of how, I mean, you've seen how big that thing is. It's ridiculous. It just comes out of the ground from nowhere. It's just this giant, living, breathing earth right there. I mean, you've got all these elements are pretty much right there on this giant mountain. And I've been to the Abbey too, actually. The last time I went, I visited the Abbey and they took me on a tour and I told them, you know, that I was a Shingon, you know, I'd studied Shingon and I was an associate minister. They were very nice. Took me all over the place and it was beautiful. I really enjoyed going there. And it's right under the mountain, so you can't really go wrong there. I mean, you're looking at every window and the mountain's right there. But I had told my teacher that I was going to go to the mountain, and he suggested that I go up and I make offerings on the mountain. Because you could actually drive well, this later summer, well, actually right now, because there wasn't a lot of snowfall, but you can actually, there's a road that takes you up to about the 8,000 feet mark of that mountain. The mountain's 14,200 something feet, but you can actually, there's a road that takes you up on the mountain to the 8,000 feet. And you're like, you know, looking out, and it's just like amazing. It's like you're, you know, in the heavens or something. I mean, it's like you are so high up, you can see everything. All the, you're like up there with the clouds practically. It's crazy, you know. But I had told him that the year prior that I had gone up on the mountain and I went a little, for a little hike and all that. And so when I told him that I was going back, he said, you know, I really want, I think it would be very good practice for you to go up and make an offering on the mountain, like to the mountain, as a representation, as a manifestation of Buddha, this mountain, and everything that it does for us. And a thank you for everything that the universe does for me and for everybody and for my family and the protection and everything else. So normally you would do, you know, Japanese offerings, you'd go up and you would do, you know, traditional Japanese offerings. You'd do like rice and, you know, things of that nature, rice, water, you know, what have you. But his idea was different. He said, you know, why don't we try something different? He said that area, as you know, was very important area for Native Americans. The Native Americans, you know, had land and everything right underneath that mountain, and for years had spoke of the power of this mountain, and they used to do all sorts of things, you know, to the mountain and offerings and things of that nature. So his idea was to, for me to make offerings of corn, make an offering of 3 ears of corn. I tie them together, and you know, I went to the farmer's market and I got, you know, I got big ears of corn. And I went up on the mountain, and actually went up with my family, with my wife and my daughter, and I found a perfect spot where I have a nice visual, you know, where I'm on the rocks and on the actual mountain itself, not on the concrete. I like walked out into the middle, you know, where there's, maybe I'm not supposed to walk there. I think it's okay. But I walked off the trailer and I found it, a trail, and I found a spot where I can, you know, lay these mountain, the corn, ears of corn down on a rock right in front of the mountain, and basically go through, you know, some prayers and make an offering, you know, for everything that I have, you know, offering a thank you to my wife, a thank you to my child, a thank you to the universe, a thank you to, and it was I can't even literally explain what that was like. I mean, as a Buddhist practitioner, as somebody that's going through training, as somebody that is trying, you know, that is trying to connect with this great thing, you know, this thing that's greater than me and is me all at the same time, trying to find that connection. That was an amazing thing, an amazing experience. It really was. And to this day, I still would like to be able to take a group of people and go up and actually do something on Mount Shasta, meditate, do some offerings, do some, you know, chant the Heart Sutra, something. I mean, I've been wanting to do this, and someday I would love to be able to do that. I'd love to be able to get it. You know, maybe even you guys would be willing to do this with me. I know it's a few hour drive, but it's so beautiful up there, and I think that all of that did is that allowed me to really have a greater understanding to me of what Buddhism was all about, what Shingon was all about. And when I came back, I reported all of this, you know, everything that had happened to my teacher, and he actually had me write, you know, like put it in writing, like what happened, you know, what I did and how it was felt and everything else. So I did that, and I think it just made me really realize really the basic heart of what Shingon was to me. And the rituals and all these things and mantras and everything are very important. They're an important part of my training and an important part of the Shingon concept, the Buddha religion itself. But really when I look at it, you don't really need, you know, as far as temples and all these different things, I mean, all these symbols and things, they're great and they're wonderful to have, but as I talked to my teacher about it and realized, you can't really get more of a temple than standing on Mount Shasta and making an offering. I mean, this, if that isn't a temple, what is? You know? That is not a man-made thing. That is something that is just grown from the earth itself and is has this tremendous power, right? So it made me kind of change a lot of my thoughts about things, because I used to always think, you got to go to this temple, I got to go to this temple, I got to do that. The reality of it is temple is really wherever I am. This room is a temple. That park across the street is a temple. I mean, life itself is essentially a temple. And yes, I think it is great that there are, you know, and obviously my temple in Hawaii is beautiful. It's been there for 98 years. I mean, I was thankful enough to be able to visit it earlier this year, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's a, you know, absolutely gorgeous, you know, temple. But the reality of it is going out and experiencing the world around us and recognizing that we are all together and that we are all sharing things and that there's not really a whole hell of a lot of difference between me and you and you and you and everything that's here. We're all sharing this, and that is really the important thing that I've taken from all the training that I've been through. That is, you know, to me, that's what Shingon is. It's a living, breathing form of Buddhism. And there's a lot of different elements and parts of it that are involved, but the six element practice, I think, has related very, very well to what it is, because when we do the six element practice, what are we doing? We're essentially letting go of ourselves. We're letting go of this concept that we are having a separate self that exists all by itself and so on and so forth. I mean, we've all been through this practice, so we all know. But we're letting go of that. And we're basically letting ourselves realize that we are all a part of this greater thing, this greater being. So to me, that's why I think the six element practice has been such a great thing to teach, and why I think I like to relate it back to the Shingon concepts, because I think that all of you, you know, having gone through all of these six elements and everything, you actually are really more aware of Shingon than you think you are. I'll put it like that. At least a part of it. That's, you know, that's really the truth of it. So I think that, I don't see what time it is here. I'd like to be able to meditate a little too. It's already 8:25. I mean, I could probably keep talking for at least another hour. I'd like to not do that though, because obviously it's almost 8:30, and everybody trying to keep this thing on in a timely manner. But I think, you know, one of the other things that I'll mention before we go into the meditation. And by the way, we're gonna do the earth element today. I haven't done the earth element in a while. I think the last time I did it was when we did our retreat. So I thought it would be a good one to do tonight. Anytime I ever like to do an element, one of the elements, I usually like to refer back to the beginning, because I think that the earth element is the one where really it all kind of starts from, it all kind of basis, you know, from. So that's what we'll be doing tonight for a meditation. But I think that, you know, one of the other things that I think that the Keigyo and all the training and everything that I've been through has done, and I mentioned that it kind of reconnected me with things. And for me, when I look at, for Shingon, I don't want to go too deep into this because I think it'll be hard to explain in a short amount of time, but I will try to do my best to do a summarized sort of version of it. I've talked about this before, but the founder of the Shingon sect is that's who is on this picture here that I have next to me. His name is Kukai, later became known as Kobodaishi. Kobudashi basically, as I was talking to David about, essentially, if you want to look at it from an American sort of view, is basically considered like a saint. I mean, you know, you look in like, you know, Christian religions and all that, and you realize what most people know what a saint is, and that's essentially what Kobudashi is. Kobudashi has, when he passed on, he basically had, you know, his prophecy was that he was going to rest in eternal meditation, so that everybody that was people like ourselves would be able to connect with the force, you know, with him, and be able to use him as a guide, as basically as a deity, somebody that is there to help us, right? And when doing the Keigyo and going through everything I did, I had always, over the last, I mean, even back in the 90s when I first started this, I had always, you know, chanted the mantra for Kobudashi, and I had always, you know, had the visual, you know, the visual of him in my mind. But as I was going through the Keigyo, I actually felt like I connected more with that, more with that feeling and with that him as a outside help, so to speak. And for me, you can look at that in a lot of different ways. I mean, for me, really all of these things that are, you know, even the trees and everything else, I mean, these are all things that are considered help to some extent, because they're all there as reminders, right? I mean, you can look at, you know, nature itself, you know, as a reminder of a lot of things, right? I mean, it reminds you of where you are and reminds you of life itself. So for me, reaching out for outside help, or just knowing that I've got a guide that doesn't ever really say anything but says things. If you know, it's kind of hard to explain. It might be a little bit hard to explain that, but I kind of feel, to me, I feel like a lot of the things unfolded, like even the six element practice and that coming on, I felt like that was something that was meant to happen. It came to me because it was supposed to come to me. And I think that all of these things, and my reconnection, you know, the connection that I made with Kobudashi as I was doing all of my prayers and doing all of my, you know, my rituals and everything that I was going through, I think that is a big portion of things that helped me to realize where I was at in my training, and helped me to realize these things that I just mentioned to you, helped me to realize that, you know, my connection with everything, you know, and it's unfortunately something that's very hard to explain, you know, and that is the challenge, you know, and I think that is, you know, going out and actually being able to explain these concepts and where these things are, you know, to me, what they are to me, it's a little harder to explain than you can imagine, but I'm doing the best that I can, trying to explain it in such a way that everybody goes, oh, okay, they get that, you know. But I think that everybody, to, you know, because of the six element practice and everything that we'll be doing, I think that everybody kind of gets the basic gist of the concept of what I'm trying to explain, and you know, the six element practice is a big, really a portion of the idea of that realization of awakening. It's definitely a part of that path. Trying to figure out, you know, it's a good tool. We'll use it that way. But there are a lot of tools to help us realize that. You know, everybody is different, but I mean, obviously the mantras and chanting of sutras and things like that, these are all things, along with this meditation, along with all these things, it's a process of different things that all help you as tools to get to where, you know, this awakening that you can realize. So anyways, I think that I probably, you know, have spoken enough. And I think, yeah, I think I'd like to just do the earth element meditation. And then afterwards, if we have, you know, time, if anybody has questions or things, we can do that. I think maybe I'll just pause the recording for the meditation.
Yeah.
We've done this, like, you know, enough times to where... So I'll pause it here.